everyone. Happy Monday, and thank you for tuning in to HealthReachD News Channel. This is Melissa Biliardi, your host, and tonight our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227-877-497-4103 is the toll-free. When you call in, press 1, we'll cue you into the show. Please tell all of your colleagues, friends, and family about HealthReachD Radio, and click follow on our show page to get email reminders of upcoming episodes. Today we are literally at 44,200 listeners, thanks to all of you. And for those of you who may not know about Huntington's disease, HD is a hereditary neurodegenerative disorder which destroys neurons in the brain and slowly diminishes the affected person's ability to walk, talk, and reason. In time, they will rely completely upon others for everything. Every child of someone with HD has a 50-50 chance of inheriting the gene mutation as well. Juvenile Huntington's disease, JHD, is more rapid and virulent. These younger individuals experience many additional traumatic symptoms, decline in scholastics, adverse behaviors, seizures, dystonia, and other very severe and painful conditions. But tonight, I also want to bring our community some much-needed hope because our brilliant researchers, dedicated foundations and clinics are working even harder to provide excellent care and one day the cure, hopefully soon. There is a renewed faith, and there are viable therapy and treatment and potential cure coming closer today more than ever before. With our participation and cooperation and support of HD Research, we can do it together. Now, tonight, our incredible special guests are Dr. Kevin Biglin. Dr. Ray Dorsey may be coming to us a little later, but I wanted to introduce Dr. Kevin Biglin. He is Associate Professor and Director of HDSA Center of Excellence, Director of the National Parkinson Foundation as well, Center of Excellence, and Associate Chair for Clinical Research in the Department of Neurology at the University of Rochester School of Medicine and Dentistry in Rochester, New York. He is a graduate of Jefferson Medical College in Philadelphia, where he also completed his residency in neurology in 2000. After residency, he trained in movement disorders and experimental therapeutics at the University of Rochester and simultaneously completed an MPH in clinical investigation studying predictors of dopaminergic, I can't say that word, non-motor complications in early Parkinson's. Now, Dr. Biglin's current research interests focus on identifying clinical phenotypes in premanifest Huntington's disease, identifying disease-modifying therapies in Huntington's and Parkinson's disease, and enhancing care delivery in neurodegenerative disorders. Dr. Biglin is actively involved in the Parkinson's Study Group and the Huntington's Study Group, and tonight we're going to be talking about telemedicine, which is it's a fairly new concept, although they have been doing this for a while. So we'll be talking to Dr. Kevin Biglin and Dr. Ray Dorsey here in a minute. First, I'd like to introduce Dr. Kevin Biglin. How are you tonight? And welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm doing very well. It's dopaminergic, the word you're having difficulty with.
I hope I didn't butcher that too much. So, Dr. Biglin, now I did a little bit of reading and research, and it looked like the telemedicine idea was kind of conceived a while ago, right?
Yeah, in general, telemedicine or using technology to provide care to individuals remotely has been an idea that people have been talking about for a long time. And in fact, a number of groups for things like diabetes care, radiology in some respects, have been doing some form of telemedicine probably for the last 10 to 20 years, actually. With regards to neurologic diseases, telemedicine kind of came into its own largely for the management of stroke. And so there are some treatments that are available in a very short time period for individuals who have a stroke, but individuals who are comfortable with giving those therapies are not readily available throughout many of the states or more rural areas predominantly. And the the idea that you could use some kind of remote technology, the internet, et cetera, to evaluate individuals who may be hundreds of miles away to determine whether or not they would benefit from an acute intervention for stroke was probably the first use in neurology. Dr. Ray Dorsey and I have been taking this model and looking at its ability to treat individuals with chronic neurologic diseases, initially with Parkinson's disease, but more recently we've been applying this to Huntington's disease as well.
Now, you started in 2005?
Our first...
Tony Joseph?
Yeah, our first telemedicine visits were in 2007, actually. The seed for this probably began earlier than that in 2000. So mm-hmm. when I was a fellow in movement disorders at University of Rochester, I went to the Presbyterian home to give a talk to a Parkinson's support group. And the Presbyterian home was a nursing home in Utica, about 150 miles from us. And they were interested in this kind of novel idea of developing Parkinson's disease-specific units in their nursing home, similar to what people have been doing for Alzheimer's disease. So really developing a unit that took into the needs of individuals with movement disorders and how best to care for individuals with movement disorders. As part of that context, Tony Joseph, the administrator at the Presbyterian home, was interested in whether or not we could provide care to individuals residing in these Parkinson's units using telemedicine. But it wasn't until 2007 when we, again, decided that this was something that was probably, whose time has probably come, and we're interested in seeing whether or not we could do this. And Tony Joseph mentioned that he had a patient there that they were having some challenges with and really would appreciate our input in terms of providing care to this individual. And so that was the first time we tested telemedicine to see if it would be allow us to evaluate individuals and make interventions that could improve their function and quality of life.
And you were able to utilize that for a number of years with the Presbyterian home?
Yeah, so we, since that time, we've been providing ongoing care. More recently, since 2010, we've added another nursing home, and we can talk about these models a little bit, but another nursing home in Binghamton, again, close to 170 miles from Rochester, where individuals can go to receive care for Parkinson's disease and other movement disorders. And we follow about 150 individuals, primarily with Parkinson's disease at this point. Many of them actually do reside in the nursing home, but probably 60% of them reside in the community and then actually travel to the nursing home to receive care via telemedicine. You know, usually it's, 5-10 mile drive for them as opposed to coming to Rochester, which is 150 miles.
That's awesome. Can we kind of describe to our listeners what exactly is telemedicine? And it's mm-hmm. not just by telephone. It's also video conferencing.
Yeah.
The web-based. Can you describe that to our listeners?
Sure. As I kind of alluded to a little bit, telemedicine can mean a variety of different things depending on the context. The way that we've been utilizing it is we've been using web-based video conferencing akin to Skype. So if you've ever mm-hmm. had the opportunity to Skype with your relatives or friends living
every
in different
day.
Locations, it's very analogous to that.
Right.
So I can see the individual at the remote location, at the far location. They can see me. We can talk to one another. But I think the key thing is... like you mentioned, it's not just an audio or mm-hmm. It's visual as well. And so for movement disorders, Huntington's disease, Parkinson's disease, where the examination is very visual, a lot of what we, assess is based on our visual examination. And, of course, the history plays such an important role. We found that this technology is almost as good, if not as good, if not better in some respects than seeing your doctor in his office. And the visits are completely similar to what, most people are used to doing when you go to the doctor's office, except that we're both in different locations.
Okay, so how does it work? Do you do a consultation? Do you do a history? What is a video conference visit look like?
Yeah. Well, it's, again, it's just like us going to the doctor, going to your doctor's office to see him, except you're sitting in front of a computer looking at him on the computer. And the doctor will take a history. We see patients, new patients that we've never seen before in person. We see patients that we've seen before and are following up on. But you take a detailed history about symptoms that people may be experiencing, how they're functioning, you know, what are their major challenges, what medications they're taking. And then we do a neurologic examination focused on their movement disorder. And based on that, we make recommendations about care. If we need to call in prescriptions, we will call in prescriptions to their individual pharmacies. We can fax prescriptions for physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy that can be done locally. And that's generally how we've been doing it to this point.
Fantastic. Now, something that was mentioned, that you're having a harder time translating the success that you had in Parkinson's disease to HD. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think there's a couple of factors. One is that, you know, there just are fewer Huntington's, individuals with Huntington's disease than there are with Parkinson's disease. So, you know, so trying to find individuals, get them into centers to receive telemedicine care is a little bit of a challenge. And the reality is our focus up until very recently has been primarily on Parkinson's disease. So a lot of our efforts in terms of identifying patients has been in that regard. I think there are challenges that are unique to Huntington's disease as well in terms of the evaluation. So the examinations that we do for Parkinson's disease and for Huntington's disease in many respects are similar, though there are some differences. And for instance, in Huntington's disease, we are very interested in looking at eye movements, how people move their eyes in response to you know, following an object through space, but also in response to commands. And that is a little bit challenging to do utilizing telemedicine. Having said that, while some of the examination features are a little bit more challenging in Huntington's disease than Parkinson's disease, I do believe, actually, that the ability to provide quality care and with resultant improvement in how people are functioning and doing and their quality of life is feasible with Huntington's disease. It may make it a little bit more challenging to utilize this method, web-based video conferencing, for doing clinical trials or clinical research assessments.
It's fascinating to me because it seems like, at least where I live, there's no center.
That's
so
right.
Would it be possible to set something up with my doctor or my son's doctor or whoever? Or the local, you know, clinic.
Yeah, I mean, I think
here to do something like this, you know?
Yeah, I think the, you know, one thing is that that's really the key value of telemedicine is the, you know, there are not specialists to provide care for Huntington's disease in most locations. You know, individuals who treat or experience in treating Huntington's disease tend to be localized in urban centers or in you know, small regions, and there are just vast areas of the country that there are no Huntington's disease specialists. Let alone there may not even be any neurologists, let alone even a Huntington's
right.
disease specialist. So, the ability to connect patients with physicians and other care providers, nursing, social work, et cetera, via telemedicine, who have experience in treating patients with Huntington's disease is really the value, I think, here is really one of improving access to experienced and high-quality care.
Right. Now, can you explain also to our listeners how the system actually works? Because, I mean, do you have to have a specific setup on the other end?
So currently the major requirement is that you have a computer. Now, the computer could be an iPad. It doesn't necessarily need to be a a desktop computer or even a laptop computer. An iPad would probably be sufficient for this purpose. In fact, we have done visits using iPads in the past, but you need some sort of, you know, computer system, and then a high-speed internet access, which, you know, can be a limiting factor for some individuals.
True.
And so the setup is the way that we're currently doing it. We're using a software called Video, and that software encrypts the signal so that our interactions with patients are completely private.
Secure.
And, you know, we send a link to the patient. The patient clicks on the link, or the whoever the provider is on the other end clicks on the link, and that connects us directly into the virtual room where we conduct the visit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do they have to have a special software in order to do that, or?
They don't, actually. So let me rephrase that.
Okay.
For the video software, that is something that they download online. So they go onto the video website.
Mm-hmm.
They download the software onto the computer, and then
okay.
they click on the link that is sent by us, and that brings them right into the room once they've downloaded
okay.
the software
and
online.
And that's a secure link.
And that's a secure link for
oh, that's
them.
Fantastic.
That link is specifically for them.
Uh-huh. So are there plans in expanding this capability, or... Are we still in kind of test mode?
Well, the barriers right now to expanding the program are, one is one of reimbursement. So
mm-hmm. That was going to be my next question.
There are very varied reimbursement models for telemedicine.
Mm-hmm.
Medicare will reimburse telemedicine originating, meaning where the patient is,
mm-hmm.
in specific at specific centers. Usually that does include nursing homes, but it does not include the individual's home, so it wouldn't reimburse a visit directly into the home. And it does it only in what is defined as rural areas by Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, where we're doing the bulk of our telemedicine right now in a town called New Hartford in central New York, population 20,000 individuals, is not considered rural enough to be reimbursed. But this
mm-hmm.
is changing. I think there is a lot of incentive both federally and at the local level to change reimbursement strategies for telemedicine. So I'm optimistic that that's going to change quickly.
It seems like it would save time and resources and...
Certainly seems that way to us. We do have, you know, we have been collecting data on this, and we
mm-hmm.
did a recent study, Ray Dorsey and I, looking at telemedicine for Parkinson's disease directly into the home, and we found that on average people saved about 2 hours of travel time if they
mm-hmm.
were receiving telemedicine as opposed to coming to the office to see the physician.
Wow!
So it's a huge impact on, you know, patient time, caregiver time. You know, resources associated with driving. And there's a lot of evidence, actually, that access to specialty care for chronic neurologic diseases, things like Parkinson's disease, things like Alzheimer's disease, and
mm-hmm.
we think this is probably true for Huntington's disease as well, results in cost savings through lower nursing home placement rates,
mm-hmm.
Lower hospitalization rates, lower complications to therapy, that type of thing. So I think there's a lot of intrinsic value in doing this type of model.
Yes. Now, are you working with nursing homes now for Huntington's?
Yeah. So, the nursing homes we're currently working with actually don't have any Huntington's patients in them, which is the challenge.
Oh.
But
uh-huh.
Certainly we're open to seeing community members with Huntington's disease. And we recently completed a study of telemedicine in Huntington's disease, looking primarily at the issue of whether or not we could do the examination via telemedicine. As I mentioned, it is a little bit different than Parkinson's disease, and certainly it was more challenging overall. But having said that, the ability to connect, interact, examine patients with Huntington's disease via telemedicine seems completely feasible, and we're very interested in expanding telemedicine for care of individuals with Huntington's disease, particularly because we know that our center, you know, in Rochester, we see patients, multiple patients from hours and hours away, and it makes it very challenging for them to come and see us on what we feel is a a regular basis that we feel is adequate. And certainly if they're throwing any kind of weather issues in upstate, we have our weather issues. And so, you know, there are people who just can't be seen because they can't travel. So we are definitely looking into this possibility of expanding telemedicine for Huntington's disease. We're very interested in evaluating whether or not we can provide multidisciplinary care via telemedicine for individuals with Huntington's disease. We know that seeing your social worker, seeing a psychiatrist or a psychologist, seeing nursing, rehabilitation specialists, that all those things are important in terms of improving the health, maintaining function, improving quality of life for individuals with Huntington's disease. And we think telemedicine may be a means for doing that. It's particularly relevant in Huntington's disease where, you know, if you're living in a very small community, it's unlikely that the physical therapist has ever seen somebody with Huntington's disease and knows what the best approaches are to treating that. Mm-hmm. So having,
that's excellent. Now, is that something maybe the centers could start doing as well?
Yeah, well, I think that would be so we're right now looking at evaluating this for Huntington's disease because, we mentioned, our experience in Huntington's disease with telemedicine has been somewhat limited, even though we're very optimistic about its potential to provide care. We still think that there is something to learn in Huntington's disease, particularly with regards to this multidisciplinary piece and integrating all the different specialists in using telemedicine. So getting the people who really know Huntington's disease to the patients where they live.
Now, what about, we have a question here. James, did you have a question from Facebook?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. The question came in and says, what if someone is uncomfortable with the video aspect, or if they do not have video capability, can they still participate?
That's a big concern is people's comfort with technology and using this type of technology. I will tell you that, you know, in the over 150 individuals that we've been following, many of them even are elderly individuals. People have been very comfortable with the web interface interaction with the physicians. And one issue that people raise who haven't experienced this yet is, what's the ability for developing a patient-doctor relationship? And I will tell you that our experience has been very positive, that there's a very strong connection to individuals that you treat via telemedicine. In some respects, it seems stronger than than normal face-to-face in person, I think partly because we feel like we're doing something very meaningful as a group and that they're participating in this kind of novel approach to care. But, you know, I will occasionally go out to these centers, these telehealth centers, these nursing homes where the telemedicine visits occur, give talks about telemedicine and actually meet these patients for the first time. And I don't even recognize that I'm just meeting them for the first time in person. I feel like I know them so well. I think that, while that's a legitimate concern, I think most people are very comfortable with it. It is challenging to know, what the value if without the video piece is. In general, we think there is added value using video. Primarily, one, I think, the development of a relationship is easier when you can see the individual that you're talking with.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, our ability to really evaluate how well the patient is doing is dependent partially on our ability to do an examination, though, of course, the history is important. So I think you could potentially provide care using just audio over the phone, but I don't know that the care would be as good or high quality as with the video.
It looks like we have Dr. Dorsey here.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you very much for inviting me. Sorry to be late to joining you and Dr. Bigland and your audience.
We totally understand. Dr. Dorsey, can you give our listeners just a brief bio sketch of what you're doing now?
Sure. I'm a neurologist at Johns Hopkins, and with Dr. Biglin, have been active for the last 5 or 6 years in using telemedicine to increase access to care for people with Parkinson's disease, and now more recently with Huntington's disease.
So you guys have been working together on this from the beginning with the Presbyterian Home?
Yes.
Okay. I saw a little news clip on one of the websites. I forget which one. Oh, it's the Rochester EDU website. And if it's okay, I'd like to post that link. It's a video from 2009. Have you guys had
sure.
any updates on your videos?
I'm sure both Kevin and I have been active. Kevin will give you a better perspective on what Rochester has up on their website. We can provide you some additional links.
I'm not even sure what the 2009 video is, so I hope
it's very well done. It just gives a brief kind of idea of what you're doing for the Parkinson's group. So I just posted it in our chat room. Hopefully folks can go there and watch you guys. But I'm really, really excited to have both of you on. I've been after you for the telemedicine now for a few months, and I'm so glad to have you both on. We were talking about some of the barriers, and we were talking about how the technology works. But my main question right now is, how can we get other centers and other physicians to do this type of medicine? Because I know from my own experience in my son's condition, he can't travel to the centers very easily. We're 300 miles either way from any of the centers. Mm-hmm. We're smack dab in the middle of the state, and it's really difficult for us to get anywhere because of his spasms. He has really bad pain. Mm-hmm. Complex pain syndrome, and so when he travels in the car for too long, he's really in a lot of pain. So with that said, you know, how do I get my doctors to work with you guys?
Well,
let Dr. Dorsey talk for a while.
So I think, one, we have to demonstrate that this model works for people with Huntington's disease. We've been able to demonstrate that this model works for people with Parkinson's disease. And that now today that we can, with great confidence, you know, provide care to people with Parkinson's disease directly in their homes. We would love to be able to say that we can do that definitely for Huntington's disease. We haven't had enough experience or enough evidence to demonstrate that that's indeed the case. We think it is, but people with Huntington's disease, it's a more complicated condition than Parkinson's disease. People are even more rural. They're probably a little bit less familiar with technology than people with Parkinson's disease. Sometimes, you know, the disease leads people to live on the more on the fringes of mainstream society. So it's a very devastating disorder, and we first need to show that we can provide care and meet all the needs, both physical needs, social needs, dietary needs, you know, behavioral needs of patients with Huntington's disease. And then, so that's what we need to do on our end. And then the bigger piece is what we need people in the community to do. It's not so much getting the doctors on board. It's really getting the Huntington's disease community and the patients to really advocate, because there are a lot of barriers that are completely unnecessary right now to having this model be able to provide care to your son. One of the barriers is that physicians need to be licensed in the state in which the patient physically resides.
Right.
So I practice in Baltimore, Maryland, so frequently individuals from Delaware or Pennsylvania or West Virginia come to see me in clinic for Huntington's disease or Parkinson's disease, and I can provide care to them, but licensing laws prevent me from providing care to them in their homes.
Of course, but how would I get, say, for example, my son sees Dr. Vicki Wheelock up at UC Davis. But we're about 350 miles away, and he does have a complex pain syndrome that doesn't really give him, doesn't afford him to travel very easily. So how would I set something like this up with Dr. Wheelock?
And so the second major barrier that's preventing Dr. Wheelock from providing care to your son is that no or few, if any, insurers will pay for care provided to patients by a physician directly in their home.
They'll pay for
you to drive 300 miles to go see Dr. Wheelock at University of California at Davis and spend time checking in and parking and seeing Dr. Wheelock for half an hour, who's an outstanding physician, and then for you to go all the way home with your son who's got a complex pain syndrome, which is exacerbated by being in the car, they'll pay for that.
Okay, who do I lobby?
But they don't pay for Dr. Wheelock for you to turn on your computer and Dr. Wheelock to smile at you as she would and provide care to your son directly in your home and get a 30-minute visit and be done and carry on with the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And so the Huntington's Disease Society of America can help change this. You know, in Parkinson's disease, there's the Parkinson's Action Network, which is a lobbying group for people with Parkinson's disease. This is not, you know, specific to Huntington's disease. This is true for Parkinson's disease. This is true for Alzheimer's disease.
Right.
You know, there's 10 million Americans who have Alzheimer's disease, or maybe 5 million Americans right now. By 2030, there'll be 10 million Americans who have Alzheimer's disease. And by the nature of having Alzheimer's disease, they don't want to be put into unfamiliar environments to receive their care, right? It's counterproductive to the whole idea of delivering patient-centered care. And the same is true for Huntington's disease. So this is where patients need to come up and make their voice heard and say, this is ridiculous. You are not meeting our needs. You're creating barriers between us and our physicians and the care that we need and want.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go. Yeah. So this is really all about advocacy and awareness. Again, you know, bringing this to the community. And saying,
I think
that's
exactly right. And the only thing I'd say for Huntington's disease, we still need to demonstrate that this works.
Right.
We may find out that people aren't sufficiently familiar with the technology, although I suspect that they are. We may find out that there's some things we are limited in our ability to manage, and there probably are. But I think, and Dr. Bigelin can give his opinion as well, we'll be able to meet, you know, 75% of the needs of patients remotely. And in some instances, I think we'll be able to meet their needs better than we can currently.
And certainly, you know, if they would not otherwise access care, you know, we're going to be meeting their needs better than not receiving care at all. So given the alternative, I think it makes sense.
Right, which is sometimes what happens in our case because I can't take them out of town.
No, absolutely. And there's a number of people who are in a similar situation.
Yeah. Interesting, though. What about clinical trials? Can this be also utilized for clinical trials?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of our overarching goals is there a way to reduce the burden on research participants involved in clinical trials? And we know in Huntington's disease, treatments aimed at slowing progression or delaying the onset of disease in individuals who carry the mutation for Huntington's disease is something we're all very interested in pursuing. But it's likely that studies of treatments in these populations are going to require thousands of patients followed for many years. And currently, the way clinical research or clinical trials are set up is individuals have frequent visits, usually at a specialized center for Huntington's disease.
Mm-hmm.
So by that very nature, there are a number of people who can't access those opportunities, and there are missed opportunities, I think, also for researchers in terms of enrolling individuals in these types of trials. But the burden accumulates over time. Individuals have progressive disease, and they're required to come in for many visits over many years, and we tend to lose individuals, and that makes it more difficult for us to show that treatments work. So if we can use this type of technology to do clinical trials assessments directly in an individual's home, reduce the burden of the frequent visits, travel, and also open up access to individuals who don't reside near a Huntington's center, I think that would be invaluable both for the research community but also for individuals interested in participating in research.
Mm-hmm. Is this something that is in the works, or are you discussing this, or is this already kind of in queue for doing
well, it's something Ray and I have been discussing for a long time, and I've submitted grants to fund as well, not yet successfully. But I think there are a number of groups. The National Institutes of Health certainly is interested in this idea. I think in Huntington's disease, CHDI is interested in this ability to evaluate individuals remotely in clinical trials. So I think there it's a matter of time before we can we need to demonstrate that this is possible, that we can do assessments remotely in clinical trials, and that the outcomes, the results that we show for these studies are similar whether we evaluate people in person or we evaluate them remotely in front of their computer.
Okay, we have a couple of questions. Okay, here's one. Deb Madden, Dr. Dorsey, in what department are you at Hopkins? She says, I live in Baltimore, and this is the first time I'm hearing this.
I'm in the Department of Neurology and at Johns Hopkins for Huntington's disease. Most of the care is delivered through the Department of Psychiatry, but we're always happy to help provide care to people with Huntington's disease.
Very good. Okay. So, Deb, make your appointment. okay, here's another question. What can the
community... I'll give you the number to make an appointment.
Okay.
Is area code 443-287-0516, and if she says that she heard about us online, we'll be sure to accommodate her.
Oh, very good. Okay, her name is Deb Madden. 443-287-0516?
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Dorsey. Okay, now we have another question. What can the community do to help them? How can we, the HD community, help? What can we do to help?
Well, I think you can do what you've do well, and that's organize and be an advocate for you and for your community.
Okay.
You know, there are lots of advocacy organizations that the Huntington's disease community has created, and I'd use those to be advocates for yourself and join with other diseases that would benefit similarly from this type of approach. There's legislation before Congress from our Senator Udall from New Mexico has put forth legislation that would remove licensure barriers and define licensure laws as being the state in which the physician is currently located, as opposed to, you know, where the patient is currently located. So that would alleviate a lot of the burden. If you look, you know, if you take a step back and you look at what's the greatest medical accomplishment of the last 25 years, it's probably that we've changed HIV and AIDS from a fatal, uniformly fatal condition to a chronic one. Right? Magic Johnson, you know, went from when he was diagnosed, it was virtually certain that he was going to die, you know, within 2 or 3 years. And here he is 20 years later, you know, owning the Los Angeles Dodgers. And the reason that came about was there are great scientific advances and there are great medical advances, true. But really came about because the HIV and AIDS community formed quickly and became strong advocates and said, you know, we're tired of dying, and this can't go on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the message. And, you know, if that message is loud enough and made powerfully enough and succinctly enough by the right people, and the right people are not physicians, by the right people, change can happen.
Right.
And so the same thing needs to happen, you know, for Huntington's disease and for the way that we deliver health care. It has not fundamentally changed in half a century, and it really doesn't meet the needs of people, and it's not focused on patients, and that needs to change.
Now, will this be one of HDSA's initiatives to work on this, or is this not something that's on their agenda right now?
Yeah, I can't speak for the HDSA because I'm not a representative of the HDSA, but I would say this would be a great thing to take to the HDSA or to other HD advocacy organizations. So this is you know, something that, you know, has potential, and we want to see it be realized. You know,
right.
We don't live, you know, people with Huntington's, we know don't live, you know, in major urban centers, or some do, but not everyone does, and they don't have access to physicians. And, you know, the likelihood that an HD specialist is going to move out, I don't know where in Central California you are, but, you know, the likelihood that an HD specialist is going to move out there is remote.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be located in urban centers. So rather than trying to get them to relocate, how about we use technology that everyone's using right now, that grandma's using to communicate with their grandchildren to provide care to patients where they are?
I totally agree. I don't think HDSA would listen to me, though. I really don't.
They'll listen to your listeners, and Congress will listen to your listeners.
Yeah, I don't know. That would be a project for sure. I will definitely be putting the word out through my show and through all of our websites and you know, networkers, groups and that kind of thing. But I think this is something that is really going to be the future of medicine in a lot of ways, especially for late, you know, people who are in a later stage. Do you think?
Yes. So the paradox is, again, what we know is from Parkinson's disease. We want to emphasize again that we have not done the research or done the evaluations of, you know, hundreds of patients with Huntington's disease remotely as we have for Parkinson's disease. But we know in Parkinson's disease, it was a nursing home that contacted us. The paradox in Parkinson's disease is that patients with the most advanced disease, the most complicated disease, those with the greatest need for specialists have the least access to it.
Uh-huh.
And we've been able to, you know, change that paradigm by providing excellent access to individuals in select nursing homes for their residents who have the most advanced disease. And, you know, we've been able to make dramatic changes. You know, Dr. Biglin's published a paper. First patient he took was a nursing home, was having behavioral problems, was trying to climb outside the window, having significant memory problems. He changed the medicines that patient was on, including medicines that were causing the memory difficulties, resolved all the memory difficulties. They went from scoring on a cognitive scale from a 21 out of 30 to a perfect 30 out of 30, and became a model resident in the nursing home, and, you know, lived 3-4 years of an active and full life, or even relatively full life, with Parkinson's disease. I mean, you can make dramatic changes. Now, these changes are a little bit more dramatic in Parkinson's disease. We get more effective therapy than we do for Huntington's disease, but still there are opportunities to make changes and improvements in the care of people with Huntington's disease. And if nothing else, to actually provide care. I mean, some people are going without care.
Yeah.
I mean, a fundamental tenet of medicine is that you actually care for the patient, and this is an opportunity to provide that care, even when there's no additional therapies that can be done.
Wow. I hear the passion in your voice, and that really translates loud and clear to me that this is something that you feel very strongly about, and I'd like to do whatever I can to help in that way. We did have a comment from someone in our chat room. Let's see if I can find it again. Hold on. I keep scrolling. James, are you there? Did you see Judy's?
Yes.
Okay,
Judy says, let's see what advocates can do to support Senator Udall's initiative to eliminate licensing barriers for doctors to provide telemedicine. And then a note to you, Melissa. Oop, and I just scrolled. There's a lot of activity.
Yeah.
Possibly a good guest to have on your show. And then Judy goes on to say, UC Davis, Dr. Wheelock, and Harry Temkin are already using telemedicine, but perhaps only in California, but she's not certain. And then Deb Madden says, Dr. Dorsey, you are like a breath of fresh air.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I think there are lots of great physicians in the HD community, and just because, you know, people become really vested in the HD community because we realize it's a devastating disorder, and it's devastating not just for an individual but for their family and for generations to come, and we want to help, you know, break that. You know, it would be great that we will have a call maybe a year from now or 2 years from now or 20 years from now that will talk about a treatment that can, you know, change the way that we a treatment that will make a huge difference for people with Huntington's disease. But until that time, we can certainly improve the way we deliver care to patients with Huntington's disease. We can certainly reach more patients than we currently are doing, and we can certainly, you know, address problems that are treatable for people with Huntington's disease, whether it's depression or nutritional status or, you know, psychosis. We currently have those treatments available, and one of the major barriers is not being able to access them. And a couple other things, you know, contact Senator Udall's office and say this is the best thing that we need to do is address these licensure things. Mm-hmm. It's not just for Huntington's disease, it's for a whole range of chronic conditions that people have, and they're not being able to access to care solely because of arcane licensure laws. And then say, you know, two, we need to find reimbursement models whereby physicians and providers are actually rewarded for providing care to patients on their terms.
Mm-hmm.
We have another comment.
Okay.
Basically, are you aware of whether or not Hopkins is informing the patients of your efforts, or where is that taking place?
So both Kevin and I do a lot of telemedicine efforts, and right now for Parkinson's disease, we at Johns Hopkins are offering free one-time evaluations for anyone with Parkinson's disease in five different states: Maryland, Delaware, New York, Florida, and California. Those are the states in which I'm licensed. And they can find out more about that by, see if I can get the website address. I think it's hopkinsmedicine.org/PD telemedicine. So we're doing that for patients with Parkinson's disease. We don't have sufficient evidence and sufficient comfort level to yet to do that for Huntington's disease. But again, we would love to be in a position, you know, a year from now to come back on and say that we have sufficient experience to do this for Huntington's disease. We have a sponsor who's making this available for people with Huntington's disease to get care wherever they live for free. We're doing everything that we can think of to remove every conceivable barrier to care for people with Parkinson's disease. We'd love to extend that for Parkinson's disease, to Huntington's disease.
Okay, so what exactly is it that you're needing?
So we need more experience to do it. For Huntington's, we need more experience doing it. Huntington's is just a little more complicated condition than it is for Parkinson's disease, and the patient population is different. You know, people with Huntington's disease are affected differently than people with Parkinson's disease. So we need more experience. We're working to gain that experience. Dr. Bigland was the principal investigator on a recent study looking at remote assessments for Huntington's disease related to movement disorders. He probably spoke to you about that. We need additional experience, additional comfort to then gain experience and to make that more available for Huntington's disease and to be an advocate on the physician front. But again, the change from HIV did not come because of all the infectious disease doctors and the world saying we need better treatments for HIV. It came because all the patients with HIV and their families came together and said we need better treatments for HIV.
I guess one of the questions that are coming in most common tonight is people are basically wanting to know within the Huntington's community, what can they actually do to start this connectivity between both you and Dr. Bigland? Because we have, you know, Melissa and I, we have an extensive Skype connectivity with the community that, you know, I'm seeing here that people are wanting to make an appointment. How does that take place to start that off?
Kevin, do you want to discuss the Griffin Foundation? Do you want to take a crack at this?
I mean, I think the issue is really, it's one of, you know, finding resources to support physician efforts, to support the, you know, the networks that need to be in place to do this. As many people probably think, that, why haven't I ever heard of this? Well, you know, one issue is that it's not something that is probably feasible to provide on a large scale unless reimbursement models change, unless licensure issues change. And so those would be kind of the first steps in addressing this. Now, we are discussing, as I mentioned earlier, this idea of implementing, at least within New York State, which is where I'm licensed only. And so, you know, I can only provide care to individuals residing in New York State. So if somebody, I have patients who live in Pennsylvania, if they're in Pennsylvania for their telemedicine visit, that is not something that I'm able to provide care to those individuals. So that's a problem, and pending legislation would hopefully address that issue. But we feel that, as Dr. Dorsey mentioned, Huntington's is a little bit more of a complicated disease. It requires a multi-specialty focus in terms of providing the best quality care to individuals. And so we think telemedicine is an ideal way of getting all those individuals with vast experience in treating patients with Huntington's disease from various specialty areas, from behavioral health areas, from rehabilitative areas, nutritional areas, and to provide a multidisciplinary approach to individuals with Huntington's disease. We need to show that, one, so that we feel comfortable that we're not doing more harm than good, two, that we can provide the data to policymakers and to the community in general about the value that telemedicine provides in terms of improving access to care, that improving access to this care via telemedicine results in improved function, quality of life, how people are doing overall with their disease, and ultimately does so in a cost-effective manner so that really there will be no choice but to make make this broadly available to individuals, make this type of model of care available to individuals no matter where they live.
Melissa, can I make one last comment? Then I do have to go
yes,
back
please.
To a meeting. The feedback, if you get feedback from people saying that this is what we want, and they give that feedback to you and to your show, that can help us, the advocates, to help develop this model further.
Okay.
But there is no greater advocate for a group of people than that community of individuals.
Right.
You know, both Kevin and I have dedicated, you know, the large portion of our professional lives for the last 5 years to finding better ways of delivering care to people wherever they are, whoever they are. And that's what we want to do. That's what we're doing for Parkinson's disease, and that's what we want to do for Huntington's disease. And we're actively looking for partners who can help move this forward. And in order to move it forward, it can't be physician-driven. It has to come from people in the community and from people with different skills and different resources than, you know, to neurologists in the Northeast.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have loud voices, and I think we can help. It sounds to me like we really need to make a big noise to the policymakers, number one, and that you'll need sponsorship, right?
Yes. I mean, We're trying as hard as we can. You know, we've done it for Parkinson's, for making it free right now for people who get a one-time evaluation. We'd love to come back and say that, you know, because of the generosity of one of your listeners, we're able to do this for free for people with Huntington's disease. Wouldn't that be a great thing to do?
Yes. Judy Robertson comments, this is a job for the HD volunteer advocates to work on together with Senator Udall. Perhaps the HDI would be willing to pay the physicians through its Enroll HD project.
I have to go now. I'm going to let Dr. Biglin. thank you very much for the opportunity
Dr.
to participate.
Dr. Dorsey, I know you have to go. And thank you so much for coming out and spending this time with us. I so appreciate your time and your passion for HD and Parkinson's. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
Have a great night.
Yeah, it's hard to, again, it's hard to address that last comment. It's hard to address what other or groups would like to do with their money. But I know that I think at least CHDI does have a potential interest in using this technology in order to do remote evaluations for clinical trials, and a project that would overlay telemedicine onto the Enroll HD project would probably be valuable in showing that remote assessments, either via web-based video conferencing, there are potentially other ways that we could do it as well, would be valuable in terms of allowing us to assess how patients are doing when they're not in our office in front of us, and would potentially minimize visits for clinical trials. I think that would be their focus because, you know, their goal really is to find cures for Huntington's disease.
I have a question for you, Dr. Biglin. This is Jamie again.
Yes.
I know that Dr. Dorsey had mentioned that obviously starting with the HD community would be a great plan. How can we get feedback to you and Dr. Dorsey? What would be the best format? Because I think after the show we are going to be slammed with emails and Facebook messages about it. So I'm wondering what would be the best way to pass along information to you?
You know, for us, I think the easiest way to how you've been communicating with us to this point is largely by email, but that would make the sense. And I think, you know, if we have evidence that there's this really huge swelling of enthusiasm for this type of care, which I think there is, that would be valuable to us in terms of going to the states, going to the federal government, in terms of developing rural or what we call rural health networks or telemedicine networks, providing care to individuals who don't otherwise have access to care.
Because what we could do is implement within our websites some type of feedback form that entails we can actually then forward you the responses from that online form.
Yeah.
Would that be appropriate?
Absolutely.
Okay. Melissa, I'll definitely get on
that's
that.
That's a great idea. Thank you for coming up with that. That's a wonderful idea. Great. Well, I know you're working on other things too, Dr. Biglin. I mean, this is telemedicine is not your only focus. So I do appreciate you focusing on that tonight with us. And I don't know if there's any other comments. Wait a minute. We did have one other one. Hold on. Okay, Deb again says, this is great and this is groundbreaking, but it is limited right now to remote areas and not recognized to provide care for individuals who currently are symptomatic. They're very much advocate-driven, and I understand and I commend them for this. So I think once people listen to the show, I think they're going to be really turned on by what we're talking about, because I think there are more people out there, mm-hmm. like my son and I, who have a very difficult time getting to a clinic.
I would say probably the majority do.
Yeah. So thank you so much.
Wow.
Did we cover everything? Is HSG going to be talking about maybe utilizing this as well? For
you know, certainly they're interested in any kind of methods that are going to improve recruitment into trials, looking at treatments for Huntington's disease, improve retention of individuals in long-duration studies. And so telemedicine seems to us to be a no-brainer in terms of, you know, allowing us to enroll people in studies who mm-hmm. live very far from centers who wouldn't otherwise be able to participate, so improving recruitment into studies, and also reduces the burden on individuals in studies so that they're more likely or more willing to stay with the study mm-hmm. that's been ongoing. So I think the HSG has an interest in this as well.
Good. Okay, one last comment. Dead man, let's raise the roof.
There you go.
James, did you have an announcement tonight?
Just a few things.
Okay.
Since the new year, we've seen quite a bit of participation and feedback from the community with regards to the show, which is awesome. Melissa and I would like to continue to hear from you and our peers regarding topics in which they would like to be discussed on the show. So please continue to send us emails and Facebook messages with your ideas, and we will definitely get back with you. We are also very happy to announce that since the release of researchforhd.org, that our research community has shown amazing support, and we'll be having many different shows regarding research and with our researchers, of course. So stay tuned for a lineup of those shows. We are very pleased to announce that we've heard from Dr. Mary Edmondson, and she will return to Help for HD, the HD View, on March 11th to discuss the behavioral aspects of Huntington's disease, which I'm seeing a trend on Facebook with many people in our community going through a lot of the behavioral side of Huntington's. So that is going to be an awesome show. We definitely need that, and we want to thank Mary Edmondson ahead of time for coming on the show.
Yes, and I think, Dr. Biglin, that would be something that you could really see in a video conference call with someone too.
Yeah, no question about it. You know, psychiatrists have been probably using telemedicine for longer than anyone in terms of evaluating individuals, and there's no question that can be a valuable means for providing behavioral health care to individuals with Huntington's disease.
Very good. Well, thank you again so much for coming on the show, and you will be hearing from us, I know. And keep up the good work.
Well, thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
Okay, and you have a great night, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay, everyone, we're going to close the show, and this concludes Help for HD with Dr. Kevin Biglin and Dr. Ray Dorsey. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in tonight. Don't forget to contact me at helpforhdinternational.org. Find us on Facebook, Help for HD, the HD View. Come back and listen to the recorded episodes. Get the free On the Road Help for HD app at helpforhdinternational.org. Also available on this app is the original mobile connection to education, resources, and information about JHD and HD. Good night, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great week.